Imagine that you are a hardworking, idealistic young deputy with the U.S. Marshals Service. You're doing hard, dangerous work, and you're succeeding at it. You like this work. It's difficult, but you're making a real contribution to the security of the American people, and besides, you enjoy it. You're optimistic about the future, but then, much to your surprise, you're passed over for promotion. You're not chosen for interesting new assignments. And then you learn that this is all happening for the simple reason that you just happen to be black. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Dr. Matthew Fogg is one of those rare individuals who is utterly relentless. But that relentlessness comes with incredible patience. When he realized that he was a victim of racial discrimination within the federal government, he filed a lawsuit. But let's start at the beginning. Matthew Fogg joined the Marshals Service in 1978 and quickly became a highly decorated officer. He was cross-designated as a supervisory special agent in charge of a U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration Joint Drug and Gun Interdiction Task Force. He was later promoted to the position of inspector in charge of the Marshals Service Unit for the International Criminal Police Organization. And he received multiple awards for tracking down more than 300 of America's most wanted and most dangerous criminals. As you can see, there was no legitimate reason to pass this man over for promotion or to deny him new assignments. It was all about race. He won that case, and he won big. But the Marshals Service, and by extension, the broader American government, didn't make any of the necessary changes to ensure that this didn't happen again, that racism didn't play a role in personnel decisions. And so Matthew led a class action lawsuit that included more than 700 current and former black deputy marshals and detention enforcement officers, plus thousands of black applicants who were not hired in the first place. That case was stuck in legal limbo for almost 30 years. You heard that right, 30 years. The case was dismissed, it was reinstated, and it was expanded over the course of those three decades. But late last year, Matthew and his fellow plaintiffs finally won that case. It wasn't the huge, devastating win that they had hoped for, but it was a win nonetheless. And it seems that the Biden administration wanted to actually fix the problem. Matthew Fogg joins us today. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hey, it's good to be with you. And we definitely got to make some corrections on something you just said. We didn't win the case. The case hasn't been won yet. It's just been a proposed settlement, which we are not in agreement with.
Ah, well, that's a much more important point.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to that. I want to start then back in the mid-1980s. You are going gangbusters at the Marshals Service. In just seven short years, you made quite an impressive career for yourself. You're highly decorated at that point. What happened to make you think that, wait a minute, something's not exactly right here?
Well, it started in 85. I filed my individual complaint. Once I got on the Marshals, and you know, being a black person and coming into an environment such as a command and control environment of law enforcement, I saw the racism across the board. It's just, what do you keep your mouth shut on,
wow,
and when do you open your mouth, when do you say something?
Right.
I mean, you see it in everything you're doing. So finally, at some point, we had a particular manager that was targeting astute African-Americans, people was most likely to succeed, and he came after me. And once he did, I in turn fought back. A lot of people didn't want me to. They wanted me to just
sure,
kind of accept it and say, look, wait till you become the director or go to the top and you'll be okay. But it's just like anybody else. You know, with my son or my daughter, I'd want somebody to step up to them and step up and be speak up for them if the system is wrong. The problem is in our system is it's a big machine. Once you start speaking out against something, especially in a command and control environment, they circle the wagons on you and they try to discredit you. And that was the whole battle that I began to fight all the way through till I won that big lawsuit in 98. Finally made it to trial in 98. Jury came back and found the whole United States Marshal to be a racial, hostile environment for all African-American deputy U.S. Marshals, ordered them to pay me $4 million, ordered them to make me a GS-15, ordered them to go back and fix the system. But then the Justice Department turned around and took them 10 years before they paid me. They fought that verdict for 10 whole years.
Oh, my God.
Until 2008, and they reduced the $10 million down to $300,000.
Oh, my God.
So it's a constant battle, and they sick the IRS on me by withholding all of the taxes and withholdings that they took out of the judgment. They stuck it in a slush fund, and the IRS thought I had it and came after me for seven more years, garnishing my paycheck and everything. When the government popped up late and said, oops, we had the money, we didn't realize we had it. Now my taxes to this day is all messed up. So it's just a constant battle. And then on top of that, the class action. All of this stuff that you look at the history of this class action and the numbers of people that it has affected, and it just blows my mind that nobody on Capitol Hill, you saw the letters that's been written to congressmen,
yes.
Grassley, everybody's spoken out against the problems in the Marshal Service. I got a website up, Bigots with Badges, right behind me. You see
That's
a
right.
New York Post, front page, 97. So it's not like nobody knows about it. The Washington Post, CBS News, everybody's done stories on it. Mm-hmm. But yet, no one has fixed it and no president has fixed it.
Unbelievable. You know, just listening to that little bit of your story makes me think that that's the same story I've heard at the CIA, at the FBI, at
right.
NSA, at DOJ, at the State Department. It's the same exact story. And you're right, too, about the very first thing that you said. The government is a great, big, slow, lumbering bureaucracy. And they know that they have years, decades that they can use to fight you and to ruin you if they have to.
That's so true. And the problem is, see, if we got EEOC and got the laws changed to where they say, okay, if the government is going to use our taxpayer dollars to fight us, then the government should pay us to fight them. It's our taxpayer
yes.
dollars. We, as a complainant, if you prove and you've got a prima facie case of discrimination, then the government should pay your legal fees
That's
to
right.
fight them back.
That's
but
right.
But they don't.
They
so
don't.
You're at a total disadvantage. And then on top of that, the government does a lot of illegal things. Remember, we got to understand the government is just not this huge bureaucracy. It is that, but I mean, it's not some type of inanimate object. It's people, a lot of racist individuals who don't believe that pretty much blacks, African Americans should be in the government, or you should be happy you got a job. You should not be on their level. And so you got a lot of people in high places. And
That's
I always
right.
tell when you got a command and control environment, it's the same as on the street. If my commander is a bigot with a badge and he expects me to treat people badly and I don't do it, he can turn right around and charge me, and the next thing you know, that bureaucracy is against me. So I got to do what he wants, and that's the way the system works.
I want to hear more about your lawsuit, and I'm going to preface this by saying I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program in December of 2007,
wow.
and I knew that I had done the right thing. But wouldn't you know, for the very first time in my life, the IRS audited me in 2008, 2009, 2010, 11, 12,
right.
13, 14, and 15. And I wasn't making any money. But this is one of those mechanisms that they use to beat up
That's
on
right.
you. So you ended up
That's
winning
right.
that lawsuit, and you won it on paper, it looked like you won it handsomely. But really,
right.
that was just the beginning. So you've
That's
got
right.
this lawsuit on the one hand that, you know, it looks like you won it, but then there's a class action suit on the other hand. Can you tell us about how that happened? Are you a part of both suits?
Yes. What happened was the personal lawsuit, I had that started in 85, and that worked its way all the way around to 2008. In the meantime, the same things that was happening to me, and of course, the continuation, the retaliation that continued happening to me after I filed the other complaint, which made new issues arise. Man, so my attorneys, we got together, he said, look, Paul, this is happening to all African Americans. He said, you got a good case here. You've proven now discrimination. Well, this is before we even went to court. But in 94, we filed it. We filed the class action lawsuit. Now, remember, my individual case was still running itself.
Yes.
Then we go to trial, and the jury comes back, and if you notice on the verdict form, the jury said, do you find the United States Marshal Service to be a racial hostile environment for African-American deputies before 1991 and after 1991? Yes. They checked both spots. So we had a good prima facie case. Then we got a firm, law firm, different law firm steps in and takes the class action, which that's the case that's running now. In the meantime, my personal case ran its course. They was, appealing it for 10 whole years. In 2008, when they finally paid me, it was so messed up with what they had done to me, and then holding the payment that they were supposed to give me, they don't report it to the IRS, and the IRS thinks I got money, and come after me for 8 whole years,
God.
Just messed my taxes and my state taxes, messed everything up, kept me from getting my driver's license, my car being registered. It's just so many things that occurred, didn't change the difference in the salary that I would have gotten while I was out on workers' compensation. It was so many things they kept doing to me that, you know, you just got to say. And again, these are individuals that somebody can pick up the phone, just like in your case. Somebody says, look, call the IRS and tell them to just audit this man.
That's right. And there's no recourse.
You can do that.
Yeah, you can't protect yourself from something like that because
you don't have
any idea that it happened.
I want to ask you,
too, about this class action. Usually when there is a class action suit, there are hundreds, sometimes thousands of victims. That was the case here. But also most class action suits, the accused is so guilty and that guilt is so well documented that they try to settle the suit as quickly as possible. We see that all the time with big companies. The government, however, responded in exactly the opposite way. And they dragged this suit out for 30 years. Tell us about that. What were the negotiations like over the course of those decades? Or is it that there were no negotiations because the government was just trying to stall you?
There were no. To be honest with you, the whole time the class was going, the only thing that made the justice, remember now, this is the U.S. Department of Justice that supervises the U.S. Marshals Service. The only thing that made them come to the table was the Washington Post article that came out in 22. That basically said that there was a lawsuit and that it's possibility that this thing has been going on for 30 years, it's possibility it may be going to trial. They came running to the table and they said, we want to settle. The problem is our attorneys went in and started doing stuff that we didn't want to happen. So now you had a problem between us and the attorneys.
Oh,
now we know there's a lot of stuff goes on behind closed doors. We don't know what's happening. But the bottom line was the amount of money, you got $10,000 right now, a potential 10,000 individuals, claimants. And we're coming up with $15 million, which is a joke. I mean, I said that in the Washington Post. I said, by the time the attorneys get a third of that, if Uncle Sam gets a third of that, you got $5 million to try to spread out with 10,000 people. You got gift cards at McDonald's.
Yeah.
So this is what we're saying. You're constantly fighting discrimination, even when you're talking about legally fighting these people. It's always something going on that's trying to discredit this class and cut it down.
Dr. Matthew Fogg, stay with us. We're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Matthew Fogg about the current situation that minority employees face in government. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with United States Marshals Service whistleblower Matthew Fogg about discrimination in the Marshals Service and in the broader U.S. government. Dr. Fogg, good to have you with us. Thanks for staying.
Thank you. Thank you.
One of the things that bothers me very much about this case, and there are actually several things that bother me, is that it has dragged on for so long. It dragged on through the administrations of 5 presidents. That is incredible to me. Why is it that no Marshals Service director wanted to settle this thing and just make it go away? Why did word never come down from the White House just to settle it?
I think is when you're dealing with racism in the United States Department of Justice, you're talking about the premier law enforcement agency in the world. I mean, you got, like, right behind me, bigotswithbadges.com. You can go to my website and read about it. But that was on the front page of the New York Post in 1997. Now, you would have thought the fallout from that, we had congressional hearings. Maxine Waters had a big hearing. At that time, Eric Holder, a black deputy attorney general, was the deputy attorney general. And we had these hearings. We laid it all out. Had the one white deputy who held up a big old rap they gave him because he testified against the government because of his black partner who was sitting next to me at the table. Now, that man got killed later. Somebody ran his car off the road and broke his neck. You know, we're very suspicious of that death.
My God.
But the reality of it is that I think when you're dealing with racism in the U.S. Department of Justice, they wanted to dig in and say, and the judge said that in my trial in court. He asked my attorney, he said, you telling me the Justice Department dug its heels in on this EEO case? And he was basically saying, yes. I mean, bottom line is, look where we are. Look at all the years it's taken us to resolve this matter. So I think what happened is somebody over there in the DOJ, they just don't want to be seen as the culprits of the things that they're supposed to be going around the country to go against other police departments and organizations, so be holding them accountable. Yeah. How can you hold somebody accountable when you yourself have been found guilty of it in a federal court? Most of the time, there's not a trial. Most of the time, there's a settlement. And you know, in settlements, they always say we didn't do anything wrong. In my case, when we're at the trial, we got a judgment. So there is a wrongdoing, a wrong finding. Now with a class action, yes, you got people over there saying, we don't want to deal with racism. We'd rather deal with anything other than accepting the fact that we're agreeing that somehow we are racially wrong. We've done illegal things. Now you got dragnet operations going on that the U.S. Marshal is responsible for around the country, and you got people being shot in the back. Mm-hmm. You got African-Americans being disproportionately locked up, targeted, all of this by these U.S. Marshal dragnet operations with state and locals. Mm-hmm. And the state and locals gonna do what we do. They're gonna follow us. Whatever we allow them to get away with, they're gonna do it.
Why do you think that changed, or let me rephrase that. Why do you think that has begun to change with at least this proposed settlement here?
I don't see it as changing. See, because the proposed settlement is so low,
yes,
that it's making a mockery of the system. I mean, to be honest with you, this settlement would set a precedent for anybody who decides to fight the institution henceforth.
Yeah.
If you have 10,000 folks. If you have 10,000 folks that have alleged discrimination over 30 years, and you're going to throw $15 million at them? Come on. The same attorneys said back in 2008, when they took a portion of this case, a case that coincided with this one, same U.S. Marshals, in the federal court, the same attorney said the case was worth $300 million. Mm-hmm. Now, we had, at that time, 700 people. Now, today, we got 10,000, and we dropped down to $15 million. Something's the matter with that.
Yes.
There's a problem going on behind the curtains.
Another thing that bothers me about this case is, as you just said, the thousands of plaintiffs involved are offered this $15 million. At first glance, that sounds like a great deal of money. It's not. Not at all. Here in the United States, the law firms that handle class action suits take the bulk of the money for their work, their expenses. I'll give you an example. I've been a plaintiff in three class action suits in the past year, and my portion of the settlement has been $7, $20, and $100. What you're talking about here, let's say there are 10,000 plaintiffs and a $15 million settlement, the law firm at the very least is gonna take $5 million. You're talking about $1,000 a piece for each of these.
Less than that.
You can't do anything. It's going to be less than that.
For 30 years.
For 30 years of discrimination. So why?
That's a big difference.
And why is it that the plaintiff's attorneys seem to have dropped the ball on this? Why'd the government not?
Well,
go ahead.
Let me tell you what I think, and you got to remember, we're at the EEOC. We're not in federal court now. This is the EEOC. So it's called administratively. Had we been in federal court, I think this would have been resolved a long time ago. The lead attorney that was handling the case for the same law firm, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Ah.
When he passed, everything changed.
Right.
I think, I always wanted with them, and I can tell you this, I always told them, look, we need to take this thing into federal court. I was saying it long, long time ago. But it never happened. And I think what happened was they thought that maybe the pot would get bigger and bigger and everybody would be better off. It didn't turn out to be that way. It turned out to be the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be where the pot got smaller
Right.
And the distribution has got to be spread out with all of these people, which is absurd. It makes no sense at all. So, yeah, I think right now we're in a very difficult situation, but we're still administratively. If we pull this thing into federal court, it's going to be a lot of media behind it, because I believe that at that point now in the world, everybody starts to hear what's been going on and thought that this thing was resolved and find out it wasn't.
You have had a front row seat for racial discrimination in the Marshals Service for almost 40 years. Has anything improved over that period of time? Understanding that it's a never-ending fight, is it at least better than it was? Or is it still?
Good question. You know, I was testifying in Maryland before the General Assembly about the same thing about a particular bill, and one officer, one of the legislators asked that same question you asked. Huh. And I looked around, I said, yeah, things have improved. I said, the technology, and I held up my camera. I said, because we were talking about police brutality and all the works. I said, before, nobody had it on camera. We was beating them down and doing whatever we wanted to do. Now it's on camera. I said, so that's what it's improved. It's now more people, social media, more people are hearing about this stuff now.
Yes.
That's what's improved. As far as the attitudes and the mentality, man, I'm telling you, I can tell you here and now, after 40 years, it blows me away that how this stuff, actually, you're talking about taking back America, it's going backwards.
Yeah.
It's going backwards. The race stuff that we're talking about here in law enforcement, the police brutality on the street and everything that we're seeing, why would it be any different if we're fighting bigots with badges working right next to us? Why would I expect them to treat somebody in the street differently? No, you don't stand a chance out there on that street going against one of these bigots with a badge. And that's why I was so glad when that New York Post said it the way it said it in 97, it laid it out. And trust me, they did a comprehensive report on the U.S. Marshals Service. Anybody can go there and read all about it. And all of the civilian stories, as well as the law enforcement stories, showed that there was a culture in place, a culture of indifference, that was really something you would never would have thought would have been in the U.S. Department of Justice.
I regret that we are even having to have this conversation in 2024. You know, so many Americans think that this nonsense was dispensed with 40 years ago, and that's just not the case. It's an ongoing fight.
It is, and it's so sad because, you know, being a black person and it's one thing to say, okay, you know, you file a complaint, we get it fixed, and you might have a few individuals that have some, you know, homophobic ideas and thoughts. But when you get into a system and you see that the system protects itself at all costs, then it shows me how, that's what I tell about command and control environments. Once you understand how a command and control environment operates, if you come into that system and you happen to have a boss that's a racist or whatever he is, don't like blacks or whatever, but he's a boss, he's got a lot of power at that point. And if
that's
he does something to people, you got to just turn your head. The same way that guy put his knee on the neck of George Floyd.
Yes.
And when he killed him, I guarantee you, one of them officers had jumped up and pushed him off and said, man, that's too much force. And George Floyd had survived. They would have brought that officer up on charges.
Without a
interfering
doubt.
In the performance of his duties.
Without
that's
a doubt.
That's the type of problem that you're dealing with in the whole law enforcement mechanism.
Dr. Matthew Fogg, thank you for joining us. Matthew Fogg won because he was on the side of righteousness and because he was patient. Winston Churchill once said that success is not final and failure is not fatal. It is courage to continue that counts. He was right. Just ask Matthew Fogg. I want to thank our guest, Matthew Fogg, for joining us and for the courage and selflessness that he has displayed throughout his adult life. And thanks to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou, and we will see you next time.